All right. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Today, we have Justin from Carter Services out of California here to talk a little bit about how they started and how they got to where they are today. So, Justin, thanks for being here.
Of course. Thanks, Kay.
Amazing. So just tell us a little bit from the beginning to now, how you started and how you got where you are.
Yeah. So my path is a little different than a lot of the people who own trades businesses. I was in finance. I guess it's become more common the last couple of years, but I've been in mergers and acquisitions for my whole career, helping owners sell their businesses, helping other companies buy and build. And when Carter Services had been around in my community, which is the South Bay of Los Angeles, for 50 years. And one of the owners, one of the Carter brothers, called me and had asked if I could help him sell. And I'd been a customer. And I flipped the script on him and I said, what if you let me buy the company? And after several months of back and forth, I actually looped in an old client of mine whose business I'd sold before COVID. I asked him, he was retired, do you want to join me for a fun new venture into the trades? And he begrudgingly said yes. And here we are almost 2 years later. We acquired the business from the Carter brothers in February of 2024. So they spent 50 years building it and we're finishing year two in our journey.
Wow, that is such a story. So your background isn't necessarily in home services, but it's something you've obviously learned a lot about and you're killing it right now. So tell us a little bit about that curve, that learning curve for you.
That would be about five shows long, but I'll cut it down. I think the first day we came in, and mind you, there have been technicians here for literally 40 years, and which is pretty rare. But that's how the culture was built, especially in appliance. I'll talk about the trades in a little while. But when we first came in, I think they looked at us like these guys don't know a thing about a thing. And the truth is, I'm not very handy. My wife would be the first one to say that I can't fix anything around our house. But I know people and I understand business. And I figured if I could get to know and understand what makes and motivates the technicians, I knew we would have a chance to be successful. I also knew the learning curve might be a little steeper. So the first year was pretty rough, only from the standpoint of we didn't know exactly what we had. We didn't know which talent and which people we could grow with that wanted to be there to support our efforts. Change is hard. So we tried to implement small changes, subtle changes, mostly that the customer necessarily wouldn't see, but to make sure our product offering was better behind the scenes so that we could feel comfortable on every call that we serviced. So the first year we took some lumps. We had almost our entire HVAC team take off after a slow season. So that was a lot of fun to kind of rehabilitate in real short order. But now we feel like we're assembling one by one exactly the team that we want to grow and build with. And the results have proven out. I don't try to focus too much on the growth and the success necessarily based on numbers. I try to gauge it based on feel and how customers are perceiving us, both the value, the offering, and then the response with reviews and calling into the office. So that whole process is definitely cleaned up from where it was in year one. And we're just recognizing the benefits of that through better conversion, better performance, and all of it.
Amazing. That is not an easy thing to do, to step into an established team, gain your footing, and then and some authority at the same time and trust that they can rely on you to be a good leader. But it sounds like you're doing an amazing job. What do you think is something about your team that stands out to not only team members, but the community as a whole?
I think it's a couple of things that we've tried to instill. Internally, I would say communication. We have an open door policy. So Tim and I sit side by side and we encourage anybody with an issue or a question or a problem, come up and see us. Don't communicate because we can't fix anything if you don't tell us what's going on. And that's usually in any good relationship. The longer things fester, the harder it is to overcome. So we said that early and often. I think we've done a good job responding to suggestions, fixing things on the fly. We tell people we're going to move fast. We're going to implement some changes. If we're wrong, we'll be the first to admit it. We don't have egos here. We want people to think it's a flat structure. Sure, there's a few of us that run the day-to-day, but we take technician and office staff buy-in very seriously. So I think a lot of people talk about culture and it's not always tangible, the growth and solidifying it the way you want it, but you can see it one by one when there's buy-in, and then it rubs off. We have a little sign up the stairs that says only positive attitudes allowed beyond this point. And they're silly sayings, but they do work. They do manifest when you're consistent with them. People know that we're not going to be disciplinarians. That's one of our, maybe our weaknesses, but at the same time, we show respect for everybody that walks in the door. And that's the policy we want. We want everybody to have that comfort when you walk in as an employee, because we know then you take the second part of the equation. We know that's going to be the customer experience as well.
Yeah.
They're going to see our tech happy. They're going to see our technician feel loved and nurtured a little bit as best you can for a technician in the field. And then they're going to recognize, wow, that's a good experience with Carter. That's a premium brand and experience. And if you replicate that one by one over thousands of calls every year, that's how you win over the long haul.
Yeah.
So both pieces are inextricably linked, and you kind of have to look at us. We're the marketplace. We're the marketplace between a good technician experience and a great customer experience. If we do those things well, we will win over the long haul.
That's amazing. And it really is about allowing your team the opportunity to trust you. Leading by example is a big part of that too. And being that positive energy when you're not feeling it, maybe some days you have to make that choice. And you're right. It does translate to the clients in the long run. They feel that this is a company I can trust. And that's the biggest thing when you're opening your home to somebody, that's the feeling you want to get. On that note, what do you do, or do you have anything in place for clients to know who's coming to their home or to see who's coming to their home? What is the process there?
So it starts with when they first call in, they're usually calling us with a problem, a complaint, something. You don't call Carter Services to be like, hey, I hope you guys are having a great day. Did you see the weather today? No, nobody calls for that. It's usually something's broken or they don't know what to do. Yeah. So our staff has to be understanding, empathetic, listen before they can understand what we should do. So then it's communication from them we use Service Titan, which we're big proponents of because it just makes our whole system much more seamless. And then you're putting notes on the job, you're informing the technician, you're looking at the job history, and then you're basically giving them a heads up who's coming and you confirm it. And then we have the automatic kind of text update that so-and-so has been dispatched. They'll be there within 15 to 30 minutes. Nobody likes long windows because that already sets a bad expectation. But we try to shorten them. We try to give them a tighter window, even though we can't always guarantee it. We try to do little things like that to make sure that the customers, I didn't take the full day off work and you guys didn't show up at 5 and the window was 9 to 11. So we're mindful of all of those things. We're not perfect, but we're mindful. And so that way, at least once we've shown up to the door, that customer feels good thus far in the process. They know the issue hasn't been diagnosed. They know we haven't suggested anything, but so far, so good. Then it's on what we believe is an expert set of technicians to go diagnose it correctly, provide solutions, whether they're short-term or long-term, and definitely not try to sell something to the customer that they don't need, but really just make sure from A to Z, that experience is sound. And if it's not, we're not going anywhere. We'll come back and fix it. If it's not done right, 1, 2, 3, 4 times, our fault, we'll come back and fix it.
Amazing. Yeah, that sounds like you have the whole process in place, the automation in place by the time technician reaches your home, you know what to expect. There's no surprises, which is, I think, the biggest thing when people are calling home services is they don't want any surprises. So it sounds like you have everything in place. Switching gears a little bit, in terms of your marketing efforts for Carter Services, obviously there's the digital side of things, which I'm quite familiar with, but what else are you doing? What else do you do in terms of marketing?
So I know there's the digital rat race, which is how much can you spend to then translate into point of sale or hot leads? I would say since we've been working with you guys and PHSEO, it's our organic and our native strategy has gotten a lot better. So that part of the digital side is way more efficient. It's way better than it was before we got in place. And so that is just making sure that our website works, it's landing, our SEO is sound, our rankings are solid enough to get in the fight with the customer when they're thinking about a couple of options. We just want to be in the consideration. We know we'll stand out once we get there. So I'd say that's the digital side. I know we'll touch on probably some of the downsides or some of the things that we've struggled with maybe after this, but the thing we really wanted to focus on was local reach. This brand has been a strong brand in the community for literally 50 years. And we just wanted to augment and amplify what they'd already built. So we come in with a little different vision or energy. And so I have four kids under the age of 10. I'm at the ball fields all the time. What's natural? Go sponsor a field. So now we have Carter Field at the local Little League, and we do an opening day tent and hand out coloring books and all sorts of things, and people love it. And that stuff works. It does. I used to think, why would someone sponsor an AYSO team? And then now that I'm in this seat, it works. Yeah. Because if nothing else, you can't really calculate ROI on that. But the amount of people those that will come up to me on a weekly basis and say, oh, I love the sign. I love the Carter trucks. I saw your guys. I saw the new showroom. It all works together. But you have to be aggressive locally to be able to supplement everything else you're doing online. And I do think we always ask ourselves the question on marketing, what can we do that others aren't? We know that we have more resources than most because we try to think about if we make a decision, we're thinking 12 to 24 months off, not reactive today. And that goes with marketing and branding strategies too. So one of those things is we do coffee with Carter. Why? Because no trades companies giving away free coffee. So we partnered with a coffee vendor and we go to the Strand or the Esplanade, where the ocean is, and we set up a shop and we hand out free coffee every other Friday. And the reception is fantastic. Once in a while, people have said, what are you selling? And we'll say nothing. We're literally handing out free coffee. And we don't have any ulterior motives other than brand reinforcement. Yeah. You see a few of our people, sometimes they're the same, sometimes they'll change out. But the point is, wherever you see us, we want it to be a positive. We want you to smile and say, that's a company I'd call. Or we get people who say, yeah, I just had James in my house yesterday. I should set up a room for him. He's there so much. Great. We love to hear it. And those are the conversations that happen all the time. People walk by, here's your coffee, here's your refill. See you in a couple of weeks. And that has been really effective. But most people just don't have the bandwidth or internal resources to be able to do it. But we love doing that type of thing.
That is amazing. That kind of stuff I'm so passionate about because it is what keeps you top of mind. Not only keeps you top of mind, but it makes people, they don't know why when they see the truck, they feel good. They feel a bit happy. They're like, hey, I know those guys. So it really sounds like you've dialed that part of it in that relationship aspect. What about any traditional marketing, radio, TV, lawn signs, door hangers, direct mailers? Are you doing anything in that aspect?
So we talked about all those things. We've done some door hangers. We've looked at billboards. So interestingly, last year we thought about billboard. There's very few billboards on our stretch of PCH going up from Torrance to Redondo to Hermosa to Manhattan. Very few. So we looked at it. And then we said, what if we looked at a space instead that was more of a permanent space rather than a rotating billboard? So that's how we ended up with a showroom. We're not really retailers per se, but it's still more brand reinforcement. So the showroom serves now as our billboard. It's just permanent and it's at ground level. And we're going to do client events and membership events and be able to say, hey, come on by. We'll do a personal appointment if you want to redesign your HVAC system or your plumbing system or look at some tankless options, whatever the case may be. So that shifted from billboard, more traditional advertising to a showroom, which is now just a permanent lease.
Yeah.
So that's worked out pretty well. I'd say the biggest thing we implemented was membership. Mm. And I'll give you an example. So we were at zero. We have 100,000 names in our database. Maybe 20,000 customers are reasonably active, depending on how you define it. But we had zero memberships. And the Carter brothers had talked about it for a while. We said, let's just implement it and see what happens. And something to note, which helps our storytelling, is we're the only company in California that does all four trades. Plumbing, HVAC, electrical, and appliance. Most appliance repair companies are just appliance. Yeah. And then most of the other companies do the other two or three. So that's great when you're telling that story of differentiation and to tell a customer, in the home, we can handle almost everything. And so that, when we offered the membership, we knew we were one of one in terms of we offer four trades on one membership.
Yeah.
And we said, make it so valuable that it's a no-brainer. Offer 3x the amount of services, put in a membership, 4 visits a year. So we got up to 600 members really quickly within 6-7 months. And that's been really powerful. So what that does when we tell our techs is, if we're slow, you guys, we're walking into the year with 2,400 extra trips in the house. You guys have that many times to go see a customer.
Yeah.
It may not be a fix, but it's going to be a check-in. And that's really valuable for long-term value. So the membership, as far as like the traditional implementation of how do you get more eyeballs, how do you get more visibility, that's been a huge game changer for us.
It does, that fills the space in those slower times. That's what keeps the technicians going. That's what keeps you top of mind. So cool that you've dialed that in. What about something that you've tried and maybe it didn't stick, or something you've done and it was...
Yeah, a lot. We're completely flawed in a lot of things that we do. We just try to pivot as fast as we can. I would say the hardest thing to overcome is the transactional nature of paid spend, where you're trying to meet somebody there that has a real kind of crisis, no cool, no hot water. So you pay ungodly amounts of money for those leads. The problem with those leads is it's just transactional. You get the opportunity to earn that business, but that's not our best showing, is repeat, to show, I don't care which technician we send to your house, you're going to enjoy the experience. So those, I don't want to call them like Google, call the three names on the list or click that link, but those are hard. Those are really hard calls for us because they're expensive and they're just price shopping. They could become good customers, but rarely. Usually it's our organic. Usually it's the search, it's the local, it's the everything we talked about before that complements the brand enhancement and awareness. So that's a tough strategy. You still have to do it to some degree, but we don't do it to the level that a lot of other people do. Good or bad, it's just been our experience. And then the other thing that we have a really hard time with is Yelp. Yelp's been very challenging for us just because they say that everything is AI, which is a convenient way to say there's no human intervention. You're going to have customers that, for whatever reason, you can't solve 100% of the problems. It just shouldn't be that the 0.01% end up on your Yelp page and the other five stars disappear. So I would say as an owner, that is my biggest source of frustration, is we try to do right by everybody. That means if it takes 10 trips, fine. You still get a one star every few months, and miraculously, those are the ones that stick. So not to go off into too much of a tangent, because that's not what you were looking for, but those are two of the things that are the hardest to overcome because they're outside of our control.
On that note, we all know Google reviews are a big deal. What do you do to get Google reviews, incentivize? What is your process for Google reviews?
Thankfully, Google reviews are a lot easier and they're more accurate. They don't drop off. We have a 4.9 with 2,000 reviews, which is more fairly representative of our overall experience. What do? We incentivize the office. We incentivize the techs. Same with membership. Okay. They're not massive amounts, but they're just enough to say that matters to us. And whether it's $10, $20, $30, depending on the medium or depending on what sticks, we want people to feel compelled to share the message, to share the experience, to convert membership. Like, you shouldn't have to sell membership. Membership should join our family.
Yeah.
And so if a technician does a good job of that, reward them. If office staff does a good job of that, reward them. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with the reviews. I think the guys, and we have some female technicians too, the staff in general loves to be called out in Monday meetings when you get a five star and it's thorough. So that's kind of part of the culture that we don't really call out the ones, probably should once in a while just for humor, but usually the five star culture works out pretty well.
I love that. It is important to acknowledge the good ones. And you know, obviously in the service, in any service industry, you're so compelled to speak up when you have a negative experience. It's a lot harder to get those positive ones and to get those people that mark it as important to give us that feedback. Good for you. It sounds like you guys, obviously with the amount of reviews that you have, you're doing a pretty good job.
Thank you.
What about if you're sitting at the table with someone who is just about to step into the home service industry? Let's just say they want to buy a business, so they're thinking about it. What is your one piece of advice that you would give if you had a chance to say, this is the one thing I would recommend that you do?
Take notes, write a book. We've all seen horror stories from day one. No, I would say I was a baseball player in a former life. I sat down with another former baseball player a few weeks ago who just acquired a plumbing company in Texas. And within the first week, he had an accident, somebody had to go to the ER, somebody didn't show up for work. It's going to be two steps forward, one step back all the time. Things happen. These are people with lives and families. It's not a product. It is the way you define it as a business. But these are real world issues that everybody has. I have a friend that says everyone has something, and it's true.
Right.
And so I think it's just, you're going to have a slow season. You're going to have somebody not show up for work. You're going to have a whole team possibly leave. Don't let it deter you. I know that if I think and make decisions based on the customer mindset, which is really our overarching theme, we'll be fine because they don't always see what's going on behind the curtain. So for the new plumbing owner, as long as you stay on course and understand it's a long game. Like now, that's why I think some of the private equity and other people, they expect really quick results. That ship has sailed. I think that easy money is probably gone. The post-COVID surge where everyone needed stuff and they couldn't get it. It's a little more challenging now. I think you probably would agree, and you've seen it just as far as leads and customer spend. It's just harder. So you're moving a little slower, or it's a little stickier than it was before, or stickier, like you're trying to fight a little harder. But you just got to stay. If you know what you're doing is the right thing over the long haul, you'll win. As long as you're solving your tech challenges and your customer challenges, you're going to win. It's the people that try to shortcut it or create business where it shouldn't exist. That's when you end up getting the bad reputation, and that kind of spreads pretty fast. So I would say to the new owner starting up or acquiring, stay the course. And also I would say it took us a year to realize average people get average results. And it's not the majority, but I would say that we've put an emphasis on hiring exceptional people that want to be here, that are yes people. I don't care the experience. I want the mindset, the attitude, and the aptitude, and we'll figure out the rest. But if you're going to go to bat for us, we're going to go to bat for you, and we're going to grow together. So the exceptional people thing is not a joke. That actually matters.
Amazing. I was just so impressed when I met James at the show. Like, how old are you? Like, you've got your head on for someone you're
young guy. So yes.
Just a testament of the people that you look for to be in place, and the people that you look for to help you do what you're doing, because that's, we rely on that, right? We rely on the people we surround ourselves with. On that,
I would say on that note, real quick, on someone like James starting up in his career, some of the others we have, when Tim and I, who still do all the interviews, when we talk to people, we say to them, our job, you don't owe us anything. Our job is to make sure whenever, if you leave or when you leave, we don't expect everybody to stay here 40 years, that you have so much better experience and you're so well prepared for whatever you do next. That's a win for us. I don't want you to feel indebted to us for anything. So for somebody like him early in his career, it's, you're going to be able to tell a story that you touched every piece of a business. It's not just marketing. It's, you're in the warehouse, you're helping the techs, you're helping the customers, you're doing membership. I want you so well prepared, you could go run your own business whenever that happens. And that will feel like vindication and validation for us that we did our job.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love that. And so what else, we talk about support, we talk about the community. Are you involved with any business organizations or anything that, I really believe in that network of support and peer support. So what is it that you get involved in?
So fortunate, I come from a big networking family. My dad had started a networking group called Provisors, which was a lot of service professionals. He grew it for about 40 years, exited a handful of years ago. Now I think they have maybe 5 or 10,000 members across the country. I, as a chip off the old block, and based on my athlete background, I started an organization with a partner called Athletes Touch about 15 years ago. It's all former athletes in business. I understand the relationship building side pretty well. It hasn't translated as much to the trades per se, but now I have that kind of small group of other owners going through the same interesting stories around the country. And what I love about people in the trades is we share a lot of the fun, and everyone's, and I've seen this at conferences too. People are open books. They want others to win. It's not, I can't share my price book with you because you'll steal it. No, it's sure. This is how we do it. Oh my gosh, that's great. Can I utilize that? And it's generally always, yeah, of course. That's what I really enjoy, is connecting with other owners that have been doing it for 6 months or 60 years, because there's so much to learn from everybody. And that's what I think we always preach to our people here, is we don't have all the answers.
Yeah,
you can always learn if you ask good questions, you're curious.
Yeah, 100%. That is so inspiring. And I'm so grateful that we had the chance to talk to you today and get to know a little bit about your story and your team and share bits of information that other people can grab onto and possibly utilize in their business model. So thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. Carter,
thanks, Kay.
California. We just love you working with you guys. So continue the good work and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. And amazingly, we all have the same colors, which I think is so serendipitous. But thank you, Kay. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.